Europe, this is more accepted than it is here. Come on around to the Dowsers, and at least once every month, somebody has some brand new input on this. I think you'll enjoy the group.
Yes, I'd like to do that then.
Okay, Rick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I've got to lay a line down here myself. It goes this way. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Getting into some areas of science that perhaps you don't know is going on out there, but it is going on, and science is beginning to tinker with your mind, and that's one of the things that we want to talk about. There's got to be something we can do, or at least fend ourselves away from it, from the government tinkering with your mind to the corporations tinkering with your mind to whomever tinkering with your mind. How far has the science gone, Bob?
Okay. We were a little bit horrified a couple of years ago when a friend of mine in Washington, Eldon Byrd, B-Y-R-D, that works for the Naval Office of Surface Weaponry, decided to do a literature search in the open literature on the subject of magnetic entrainment, magnetic control. He found close to 3,000 references in the hardcore scientific literature, and he was kind enough to send me a copy of this bibliography. So if any scientist type out there doubts this, we're trying to make all of this material available to the public on a need-to-know basis, or even if you don't need to know. If you're interested, then the Xerox cost us about 4 cents a page, and this bibliography cost him about $4,000 to have typed in the typing pool back at White Oaks, Maryland. But if anyone has a sincere interest in this, let us know. Call Paul at area code 213-393-9405, and we can make this available to you, and I think you'll be absolutely horrified at the amount of research that has gone into behavior modification. You're probably aware that Dr. Jose Delgado, with implanted electrodes, was stopping bulls, bull ring-type fighting bulls, in mid-charge when he was in New Mexico. He can now do this with magnetic fields without implanted electrodes. So pick up a copy of the January Omni magazine and read the article on magnetic fields that control your mind, and I think you'll be a little bit amazed how far this has come in the last few years.
Well, it is kind of scary. We're going to pop out of here for right now and take a little break for the news and see what happens, because another hour is coming up. Dr. Robert Beck, and we have not only talking about opening your mind, but getting into it and doing with it whatever we want to do. Or not we, necessarily, but people can, and people do, and people are. And you should know what's bombarding you left and right, and who's doing the bombarding. Is it a growing problem?
Well, the more people who know about it, the bigger the problem becomes.
Mm-hmm.
We understand there are kids in New York City with briefcases having mind-bending parties now, and who knows, like the computer hackers, where will it all lead?
It will certainly upset the way society works, doesn't it? If you can control somebody's mind electronically, there is nothing that they can do about it. It's going to happen.
There again, the choice between thermonuclear war and saving the turf and getting the people out is another moral consideration. When the woodpecker burst upon the scene in Eugene, Oregon, we were totally unprepared for the consequences. In fact, I think we brought down a little bit of a tape tonight of what
we have some woodpecker ready to go.
Why don't you fire it up and let's see what it sounds like?
Well, why don't you explain to us what it is first, for those that have just joined us tonight. We're talking about these electromagnetic and magnetic impulses that are around us all the time.
Okay. In the spring of 1978, Marshall Van Oort, who was the health physicist at the University of Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon, began getting strange reports of physiological symptoms appearing to be mild epilepsy, mild seizures. When he did a field investigation, he found clusters of human beings, even as you and I, who were being influenced by some mysterious radio signal. A lot of people got on board this. It turned out that at the time, they felt that it was coming from the Soviet Union and that the infamous woodpecker signal was a form of over-the-horizon radar. Now, colleagues of mine got involved in this new witch hunt. Bill Bice, who ran the Northwest Institute of Non-Ionizing Radiation.
Bill's been on the show and...
Good man.
Very good man, yes.
Got involved, and I was funded to come up there by the health physics department. and I had one of the only magnetic detectors in civilian captivity. I'd been doing research with this, and when I saw the headlines that this mysterious radio signal was causing problems up there, I let him know I used to be radiological defense chief of this area back in the 60s, and I knew a little bit about the way bureaucracies worked and how investigations should be run. So I volunteered that if they would send me a plane ticket, I'd come up there and see what my instruments would find. We identified this signal, which happened to be 10 hertz, which is usually a benign frequency. Had they dropped it about 3 hertz, they would have had an incredible mess on their hands. We detected the signal. It was coming in 200 to 500 microgauss, which was about 2 to 4 times the Earth's ambient. It was definitely man-made. It was an artificial signal. We found it at a number of sites up in the Eugene Corvallis area. And a few days later, the Environmental Protective Agency sent their truck with Dr. Rick Tell, who's the Western Regional Director. And he said, well, there was nothing to worry about. He couldn't find the signal. Then later he said it was a transmitter at Dixon, being run by the Navy, and then later he backed off on this.
Does he still have his job, by the way?
Oh, yes, and he's doing fine. I showed him how to build the detectors, and he's built some of these, so now he finds what he's looking for. But at any rate, this was the first time that the phenomena of electromagnetic entrainment of the human brain had been recognized as a rather global threat. Undoubtedly, this had happened on a limited scale ever since the time of Korea, when the Soviets were experimenting with electromagnetic brainwashing. So it reared its ugly head about, it would be 7 years ago. And
why did they pick on the Eugene, Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon, that...
I don't think they actually picked on it. It was sort of an accident of nature. In the first place, the entire area had a very high water table. If you dropped a hole, you'd hit water, which meant that you had a highly conductive ground plane. The second thing, the power lines were connected to the Bonneville Dam and this 890-mile-long Pacific intertie that connects out here at that huge screen wire cage in Sylmar.
Right.
If you're driving up the freeway, you'll see the southern terminus of this DC antenna. And this 890-mile-long antenna appeared to be picking up this signal and transmitting it through the power grid as secondary radiation. We traced hot spots all over that area. And so Eugene just happened to be in the way. It was also on the western slope of the mountains up there that acted as sort of a natural reflector. I don't think the Soviets deliberately targeted the area. I think it was just one of those unhappy circumstances, like the people down on Fairfax who happened to be over a gas dome.
And were they just sending the signal toward the United States, or was it something else and we just happened to get the tail end of another thing that was going on?
Well, now you've opened another Pandora's box. Some of the more recent information would indicate that the signals are coming from satellites, and some of those might be our own.
You want to say that again?
No. In fact, I'm going to avoid that topic religiously. We have had some additional input in the last month or two that would indicate that things were not exactly what they seemed in 1978.
So we have satellites that are bombarding us with what we would call the woodpecker signal. What does the woodpecker do to the human mind?
If you are sensitive to these influences, if you're in that 30% of the people who have this indigenous sensitivity, it can cause brainwave entrainment. It can interrupt the natural circadian rhythms of your own biosphere. I wish this were television. What I have here is a little electrostatic voltmeter, and I think you can see this. And I've just picked up a Scripto pencil from the table here, and I'm going to move it around in front of the electrostatic voltmeter. Now, I'm going to do something magical to this pencil. We've demonstrated this at a number of the seminars. I'm going to put an electrostatic charge on it. Now, when I move it from the same distance, you can see that the meter is going crazy. Now, if we believe the work that was done at UCLA by Dr. Hamer, and I most certainly do, we now have a charged source of electrostatic electrons, let's say.
You did that by running it through your hair.
I did this by combing my hair. This pencil would now pick up little scraps of paper, electrostatic. Mm-hmm. Now, if I wave this at you, Bill, at 3 beats per second, you can probably feel this. You'll probably slow down. If your eyes were closed and I were in back of you, you would still feel it. Now, if I move this faster, at about 9 hertz, which I'm doing right now, what I'm doing is holding the end of this pencil on the eraser end, and I'm sort of flipping it back and forth, you come back up tone. If you're one of those sensitive people, and this was the experiment that Dr. Hamer, Joseph Hamer, I don't know whether he's a doctor or not, did at UCLA, later repeated at Northrop, which caused entrainment of the human brain with these almost invisible influences. Now, both the magnetic, the H vector, and the electrostatic, the E vector, can have these effects on people who are sensitive to this. And that means that with these new artificial sources of tremendous amounts of electromagnetic energy, we are again at the crossroads. We have another threat that might be worse than the diphtheria, smallpox, and Indians of a couple of hundred years ago that we mentioned earlier on the show. And fortunately, the carrier frequency, the pulse repetition rate of this woodpecker, if you want to fire it up, we have it on the tape,
right,
is 10 hertz. And that's fairly benign, but it still can cause distress with some people who are sensitive.
And what if it was down to 7 hertz?
If it were down around 6 2/3 hertz, you would have mild epileptic-type seizures, the same as the flashing strobe lights in the psychedelic nightclubs, if they were at the epileptic flicker rate. They're critical window frequencies with most mammals. Why don't you play a little of that tape so people can see what they get on the
show? This is an actual recording of the woodpecker signal that we thought was from the Soviet Union, but it may not be from there.
Right.
It may be from our own satellites. How very thrilling to know that.
A real-time radio signal. You can see the little LED tuning flash here of the device known as the Soviet woodpecker. And we're looking at this at the 12th of January, 1983, in real-time at 16 hours, 39 minutes, and 14 seconds, coordinated universal time, at about 19 megahertz. On a little Panasonic high-sensitivity 5-band receiver, a little pocket radio. And the significant thing here is that if we collapse the antenna, to where it won't get local stations, the thing still piles in. With an antenna like this, we can get very few local radio stations, but this is about 3,000 miles away. We can take this antenna almost entirely off and put a little bitty folded paper clip in here. And this is still the strongest signal on the air that has ever been made by man. That's 40 megawatts peak power. It's been going 24 hours a day from a number of transmitters around the world for a long period of time.
Okay.
All this. Okay, that's a tape that we did when I was being interviewed in Washington, D.C. about 2 years ago. And we brought it in here tonight in case we're too close to your own transmitting towers. The last time we tried this, we were in so much electromagnetic interference we couldn't get it on our shortwave radio. So we backed ourselves up here by bringing a tape in tonight.
Yeah, we're sitting on top of our own transmitter here as far as that goes. Now, these woodpecker signals that have been coming in now, they're at a benign frequency, you say, at 10 hertz. Purpose of it?
The original estimate of the situation was that it was over-the-horizon radar originating at Riga, Gomel, in the Soviet Union, watching for missile launches, which cause ionization and therefore reflect a radar signal. At one time, and I still believe this, I believe that the technology is such that they can be used to communicate with underwater nuclear submarines at operational depths. We were still playing with Project Sanguine Seafarer. There's a great deal of additional information in these signals that is just at this time being decoded by scientists who have the proper equipment, spectrum analyzers, etc.
A lot of subcarrying going on the woodpeckers.
A lot of subcarrier information, including some pictures.
Pictures. Of what?
Well, let's talk about that when we're off the air. But it's a little bit scary. My neck's out far enough tonight, Bill. Some of this is speculative. We're not stating all of this is fact. We're just saying that this is some of the best thinking on the subject.
Mm-hmm. So the woodpecker signal is with us. Is that over the horizon radar station that has kicked up such a furore in the last few months in Washington, is that really... over the horizon radar station that the Soviets are putting up over there?
I doubt it very, very much.
But it's certainly, it's easy to call it that if you don't know anything else to call it, right?
Right.
Which is what happens in Washington. Well, we're 20 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. It's Open Mind. With me is Dr. Robert Beck. I'm Bill Jenkins. Where is it going? What's the reason for it? You say those signals are everywhere.
Everywhere. They've been protested by all of the international radio allocation boards, the ham operators, the broadcasters. They pop up at random times in the middle of the broadcast bands on shortwave. They're everywhere from about 5 megahertz to 150 or so megahertz.
How do they affect me and you, sitting here in Los Angeles right now?
Oh, well... speculation again, but I think by now, since they came on the air in July of 1976, I think by now most of us have sort of adapted. But if there's any change in these, our government became so concerned that they put an artificial 10 hertz field on terrapins, turtles. They found that the ones that were irradiated grew at about twice the rate. There were hungry all the time. When I had a pet turtle when I was a little kid, he'd wake up every now and then and eat a few ants and go back to sleep. But these that were irradiated were hyperactive. Now, when they cut this 10 hertz field off in this scientific study, the turtles became cannibalistic and started eating each other, attacking each other. Now, this study was done recently. I learned about it in Washington in the last couple of months. This is frightening. What happens when they cut the signal off after your body has adapted to this artificial electromagnetic pulse that's been with us now for nearly 9 years? We are altered.
So when you take it away from us, we don't know what our behavior patterns will be then.
We don't know. There's no place you can hide. The pulse repetition rate of 10 hertz... should not be confused with the carrier frequency. The carrier frequency is the taxi cab. That's in the shortwave high-frequency band. And inside of this taxi cab is this pulse repetition rate. And the pulse repetition rate falls directly on the mean median mode of human brainwave encephalographic signature. So it has to be interacting with the nonlinearity in our own biosphere.
Well, are these signals also present in the Soviet Union? Do you have any research on that?
I'm sure they are. But on the other hand, the Soviet Union is on a 50 hertz power grid. We're on a 60 hertz, 60 cycle, and the heterodynes will fall in a different band. Don't forget, our brain tissue is a nonlinear transducer, and it tends to mix all of these ambient signals with all the local signals.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely complex.
Well... so now we don't know whether we want them to turn off the woodpeckers or not.
Right? Good question.
Now that we've got them, we're living with them, but if somebody pulls the switch on it, what happens next?
We just don't know. We know what it does to turtles.
You're filling us full of fun stuff tonight, Bob.
Well, it's here. It's
that's some of the things we just really have to deal with. We have Edison on the line. Hello, Edison. Welcome.
Hi, it's Edson.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, how are you both?
I'm fine. Hi.
Okay, I've done a lot of research with the late Dr. Albert Roy Davis and his biomagnetic research, and I found in my own research that I've come up with what are called dicot seedlings with an extra seed leaf after I've treated them in magnetic fields. But I also wanted to ask about the research at Caltech University of Joseph Kirschvink and the magnetite in tumors of mice and the control that was given at a geophysical union conference in San Francisco in December of 1981. And another thing about the research at Shelford University in England by Dr. Cyril Smith and the people living under the high tension wires there in a certain little English village, they got a high whenever there was a peak power load because their endorphins raised. And when that power load went down, you were just talking about what happens after they turn the current off. Several of these villagers committed suicide, so it's really a danger. Also, have you heard of the hyperbaric and magnetic field combination used in the Soviet Union to treat muscular dystrophy? That is
high pressure. High pressure oxygen. We've been doing this here for a number of years, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, would you leave your telephone number with the operator? I'd like to contact you personally and get into this. You sound remarkably well informed on these, and there are not too many of you out there.
Thank you very much. Have you heard of the X effect that Joseph Goodovich reported happened in Holyoke, Massachusetts, where some early day fusion research was being done in these...
I know Joseph, and I get together with him every few years. He was quite interested in radionics, psychotronics, wrote that amazing article in Saga magazine a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not familiar with this facet.
Well, basically what happens to... similar Gauss-strength magnets, different magnetic poles, the researchers were trying to control a fusion reaction, and they unfortunately worked in where the two poles intersected. That's the X effect.
Sort of a Philadelphia experiment all over again.
Yes, that's something else.
Couldn't it?
Yeah. What do you think about crystals and also the phases of the moon, the interaction between crystals and that?
I just don't know whether that's reality, which means something going on in somebody's belief structure, or actuality, that's something happening independent of your belief.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew more about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of phenomenology about that, but raw data, I haven't seen too much.
Mm-hmm. As you may have known, I write about Nikola Tesla a lot. My letters to the editor are published in the Times every once in a while.
Right.
Yeah.
One of us.
I came across some interesting information about... Have you heard of the Amtorg Corporation, the Soviet front corporation? I don't know if it's still in existence or not, but it seems that they were quite interested in Tesla's death ray plans, particle beam plans, and even purchased some of his patents back in the 1930s.
I have the only original copy of the Tesla death ray plans, and it was a forerunner of the particle beam weaponry. It was an extremely high voltage particle accelerator, and I made all this public at the U.S. Psychotronics Conference in Atlanta last year. And so that's out of the closet now, and I'd be happy to share it with you.
It did get a dog.
Hmm.
No, when he demonstrated it, I think.
Yeah.
It was back in New Jersey.
Ooh.
Zapped a dog.
He was stripping the nucleus of mercury, accelerating it in extremely high voltage fields, and he had the first particle beam weapon system. For the time, it was highly it was a very clever device, but it's been surpassed with today's technology.
Mm.
For the time, it was an amazing device.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge Van de Graaff generator. Instead of using a belt, he used compressed air, desiccated air, running through the charge collectors, driven by multi-horsepower blowers. He collected this charge on a sphere about 45 feet in diameter. I have his own drawings and the disclosure that came from his own typewriter, and it's absolutely fascinating. At the time of his death, FDR had left standing orders that his papers were to be shipped to Yugoslavia, although Tesla was a naturalized American citizen, and so, of course, Stalin got the papers. But that's another long story.
Stalin got the papers of Tesla and the a lot of the information from T. Henry Morey.
Yeah.
Two of our most brilliant physicists, and we just didn't pay any attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, by all means, leave your telephone number with the operator. I do want to contact you early next week, and we can talk about some of this.
Okay.
By the way, we are giving this little seminar. If you tuned in late, we're talking about some of these things, showing slides, giving some demonstrations on April the 6th down at the L.A. Airport Marriott at 10 a.m. And come on down. Call Paul at area code 213-393-9405, and we should certainly have an interesting day.
Sounds great.
Ensign, it sounds like you'll be quite an addition to the group down there.
I hope I can make it.
All right. Thank you for calling, and call back.
Right.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. And with me tonight, Dr. Robert Beck. We have sort of tripped the light fantastic here about electromagnetism and magnetism and what it is doing to each and every one of us. But I think one of the important things is to point out to people is that we are being affected mentally, physically, emotionally, by electronics. And some of it may be benign. It can be fatal on occasion.
Right.
And it's manipulated by others. And it's a whole new ball game we have to deal with. Health is involved. Mental health is involved. Life is involved.
The metaphor here that I like is that it is literally an occult influence. If you look in the dictionary, occult simply means hidden. And more recently, it's become magical and metaphysical. But back at the turn, well, a couple of hundred years ago, most educated Europeans would not agree that a little thing the size of a microbe or a germ or a bacteria could kill half the population of Middle Europe with cholera, bubonic plague.
But it did.
And it did. And until we had the tools, the compound microscope, and until Pasteur, stealing from Koch, demonstrated this, not many people would believe it. Now, we have other occult influences besides germs. We seem to have stamped out most smallpox and most of the other diseases, but we're now confronted with an entirely new family of occult influences on the electromagnetic spectrum that can be just as devastating if they're misused.
And nature isn't doing them. Man is doing them.
No longer. We're bombarded with electromagnetic interference. And it is going to have to be taken into account in, well, the future of our health.
Yeah, it affects us deeply and personally. And it's something that you need to be aware of. And that's the reason we have Dr. Beck on tonight. George, you're on. Hello, George.
George.
George, we're waiting for you. Are you with us? We'll try you again. George, you there? Okay, George is not there. We'll go to Carol. Hi, Carol.
Yes, this is Carol.
You're on.
Yeah, all right. I have a very personal question to ask. A lot of this is beyond me and the scientific explanations, but it's absolutely intriguing and unbelievable.
Well, believe it.
I'm going to, because it's coming from you, Mr. Jenkins.
Well, how nice of you. Thank you.
So I believe it. However, what I wanted to say was, about 4 years ago, my daughter suffered a convulsion. She had never been sick a day in her life, and it was diagnosed as being epilepsy after a scan. Now, she's never had another seizure. She's in perfect health. She's a very bright and active girl. How can something like that just come about when there's no family history, no trauma, no nothing?
Where was she when this happened?
She was in Los Angeles, but we had just come back about 6 months before from a very unsuccessful trip to Prescott, Arizona.
Had she been to a disco or any of those kind of places?
Nothing. She's not that kind of girl, and she's never taken medication. She's never taken any drugs. Except since this incident, the neurologist who's seen her is giving her 30 milligrams of phenobarbital per day. I don't know if...
Still?
Still, since that time, right.
Well, I think I've got a second opinion.
Well, I'll tell you the honest truth. It's Kaiser Hospital that's involved, and it's covered by coverage, and I don't have all that much money, but if I knew there was an honest person to go to, I would go, and I would take her, but I have no one to go to.
Well, we're not going to say that Kaiser's not being honest.
No,
I understand that.
But I'm sure saying that I'm 6'1" and weigh about 200 pounds, and it would knock me out, so...
and yet that doesn't even bother her. She's so active and so intelligent. She drives. She does everything.
Okay, let's just hope that whatever it was does not recur. It could...
Who can I go to see? I'm just wondering where these electromagnetic devices, how that has any connection with epilepsy has been around for so long before we had any of these things.
Well, the point is that the epileptic seizures can be triggered by chemicals, by histamines, by flashing lights, and by electromagnetic energy. So
I was in the same room with her and nothing happened to me.
The thing that's mysterious here is that there had been no history of epilepsy in her family.
Now, None, on no one's side.
Well, I would doubt then that it was classical petit mal or grand mal.
When I spoke to the doctor and he said, you know, the picture showed a tendency toward it, I said, I've read that sometimes these things are positive and yet the person doesn't have epilepsy. And he agreed with me. Sometimes
I totally agree with that.
Yes. So I...